Chapter 10. To understand moral education of students in Roman Catholic colleges, one must only understand that from the beginning to the end, they are surrounded by an atmosphere in which nothing but paganism is breathed. For instance, our superiors convinced us that scapulars, medals, holy water, etc., would be of great service in battling with the most dangerous temptations, as well as in avoiding the most common dangers of life. Consequently, we kept them with the greatest respect, kissing them morning and evening with affection, as if they were powerful instruments of the mercy of God. Then we discovered in the Greek and Latin historians that they were nothing but a remnant of paganism. The modern Pontificus Maximus, the Pope of Rome, supposed successor of St. Peter, the vicar of Jesus Christ, resembled the Pontificus Maximus of the great Republic of Rome like two drops of water. Our Pope preserved the name, the attributes, the pageantry, the pride, and even the garb of that high pagan priest. Was not the worship of the saints absolutely the same as the worship of the demigods of olden time? Was not our purgatory minutely described by Virgil? Were not our prayers to the Virgin and to the saints repeated almost in the same words by which the worshippers before the images of their gods, just as we repeated them every day before the images in our churches? Was not our holy water in use among the idolaters and for the same purpose? We knew by history the year in which the magnificent temple, consecrated to all the gods, bearing the name of Pantheon, had been built at Rome. Words cannot express the shame we felt on learning that the Roman Catholics of our day, under the very eyes and with the sanction of the Pope, still prostrate themselves before the same idols, in the same temple, and to obtain the same favors. When we asked what is the difference between the religion of heathen Rome and that of the Rome of today, more than one student would answer, "The only difference is in the name. Instead of calling this statue Jupiter, we call it Peter, and instead of calling that one Minerva or Venus, it is called St. Mary. It is the old idolatry coming to us under Christian names." I earnestly desire to be an honest and sincere Roman Catholic. These impressions and thoughts distracted me greatly. Unfortunately, many of the books placed in our hands by our superiors to confirm our faith, form our moral character, and sustain our piety and our confidence in the dogmas of the Church of Rome had a frightful resemblance to the histories I had read of the gods and goddesses. The miracles attributed to the Virgin Mary often appeared to be only a reproduction of the tricks and deceits of the priests of Jupiter, Venus, Minerva, etc. Some of those miracles of the Virgin Mary equaled or surpassed in absurdity the most hideous accounts of the heathen gods and goddesses. After reading the monstrous metamorphosis of the gods of Olympus, the student feels a burning desire to nourish himself with the words of life. But the priest of the college places himself between the student and Christ, and instead of allowing him to be nourished with the bread of life, he offers him fables, husks with which to appease his hunger. God alone knows what I have suffered during my studies to find myself absolutely deprived of the privilege of eating this bread of life, His holy word. During the last years of my studies, my superiors often confided to me the charge of the library. One holiday I remained alone in the college. Shutting myself in the library, I began to examine all the books. I discovered that the books which were the most proper to instruct us were marked forbidden. I felt an inexpressible shame on seeing with my own eyes that only the most indifferent books were placed in our hands. Several students more advanced than myself had already made that observation to me, but I did not believe them. Until then, I had spurned the idea that with the rest of the students, I was the victim of an incredible system of moral and intellectual blindness. Among the forbidden books, I found a splendid Bible. I seized it like a miser finding a lost treasure. I lifted it to my lips and kissed it respectfully. I pressed it against my heart as one embraces a friend from whom he has long been separated. This Bible brought back to my memory the most delightful hours of my life. I read in its divine pages till the scholars returned. The next day, Reverend Mr. Leprechaun, our director, called me to his room and said, "You seem to be troubled today. Have you any cause of grief, or are you sick?" I could not sufficiently express my love and respect for this venerable man. He was at the same time my friend and benefactor. For 4 years, he and Reverend Mr. Broussard had been paying my board. By reading the Bible the previous day, I had disobeyed my benefactor, for when he entrusted me with the care of the library, he made me promise not to read the books in the forbidden catalogue. It was painful to me to sadden him by acknowledging that I had broken my word of honor, but it pained me far more to deceive him by concealing the truth. I therefore answered him, "You are right that I am uneasy and sad. I confess that there is one thing which perplexes me greatly. I never dared to speak to you about it, but as you wish to know the cause of my sadness, I will tell you. You have placed in our hands, not only to read, but to learn by heart, books which are, as you know, partly inspired by hell, and you forbid us to read the only book whose very word, every word, is sent from heaven. This disturbs and scandalizes me. Your dread of the Bible shakes my faith and causes me to fear that we are going astray in our church." Mr. Leprechaun answered, "I have been the director of this college for more than 20 years, and I have never heard from the lips of any of the students such remarks and complaints. Have you no fear of being the victim of deception of the devil in meddling with a question so strange and so new for a scholar whose only aim should be to obey his superiors?" "It may be," said I, "that I am the first to speak to you in this manner, for it is very probable that I am the only student in this college who has read the Holy Bible in his youthful days. I can assure you that the perusal of that admirable book has done me a good that is still felt. I know by personal experience that there is no book in the world so good and proper to read, that I am extremely grieved and even scandalized by the dread you have of it. I acknowledge to you, I spent the afternoon of yesterday in the library reading the Bible. I found things in it which made me weep for joy and happiness, things that did more good to my soul and heart than all you have given me to read for 6 years. And I am so sad today because you approve of me when I read the words of the devil and condemn me when I read the word of God." My superior answered, "Since you have read the Bible, you must know that there are things in it on matters of such a delicate nature that it is improper for a young man, and more so for a young lady, to read them." "I understand," answered I, "but you know very well that Satan speaks to us about them day and night in order that we may like it and be lost. But when the God of purity speaks to us of evil things of which it is pretty much impossible for men to be ignorant, He does it that we may hate and abhor them, and he gives us grace to avoid them. Since you cannot prevent the devil from whispering to seduce us, how dare you hinder God from speaking of the same things to shield us from their allurements? Besides, when my God desires to speak to me himself on any question whatever, where is your right to obstruct his word on its way to my heart? Though Mr. Leprechaun's intelligence was wrapped in the darkness of Rome, his heart had remained honest and true, and while I respected and loved him as my father, though differing from him in opinion, I knew he loved me as if I had been his own child. He was thunderstruck by my answer. He turned pale, and I saw tears about to flow from his eyes. He sighed deeply and looked at me some time, reflectingly, without answering. At last he said, "My dear Chiniki, your answer and your arguments have a force that frightens me, and if I had no other but my own personal ideas to disprove them, I acknowledge that I do not know how I would do it. But I have something better than my own weak thoughts. I have the thoughts of the Church and of our Holy Father the Pope. They forbid us to put the Bible in the hands of our students. This should put an end to your troubles. To obey his legitimate superiors in all things is the rule of a Christian scholar like you should follow, and if you have broken it yesterday, I hope it will be the last time that the child whom I love better than myself will cause me such pain." On saying this, he threw his arms around me and clasped me to his heart and bathed my face with tears. I wept also, yes, I wept abundantly. But God knoweth that, though the regret of having grieved my benefactor and father caused me to shed tears at that moment, yet I wept much more on perceiving that I would be no more permitted to read his holy word. The gods of the heathen spoke to us daily by their apostles and disciples, Homer, Virgil, Pindar, Horace, and the God of the Christians had not permission to say a single word to us. I must say, though, with a sad heart, that moral and religious education in Roman Catholic colleges is worse than void. From them has been excluded the only true standard of morals and religion, the Word of God.